Buster Moody. I'm the artist on Task Force Rad Squad, and you're listening to 11 O'Clock Comics.
Spectral. That's what that was. Twinkling, even. I thought you were one of the Fae. Pulling me into one of your magic spells. Behind a tree.
Like a siren. Yes, there we go. Tree, the rock.
Yes. Was that a Fae? No, man, it was a skunk. It's right there. Good Lord. A day. Thank goodness we have some good comics to talk about, though.
It'd be true.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Like it's off, dude.
Well, if that sentence was any indication, you cannot.
I can.
It's so disheartening. For those of you playing at home, we have a little bit of audio issues this week, and we cannot figure them out. Thank you, Skype. But we will try to bring you the most audio-friendly episode ever, because this is 11 O'Clock Comics, episode 916. And I'm a perplexed Vince B.
Ooh.
Yes,
I'm perplexed.
Yes.
Well, that's okay. We'll work with that. I am David A. Price.
Look at you.
Look at me.
And if you can hear me, I'm Peter Pan.
Why you gotta be Peter Pan?
Well, if you can hear me later, I'll tell you why.
Okay. But you're not Peter Pan. Although, frame-wise, you do resemble a Peter Pan. He was kind of tall and thin and boyish and all that stuff. You can't fly, though.
Jesus Christ.
Boyish.
You're not Peter Pan. You're Jason Wood, everybody. Yes, here together on another one of these things brought to you by CheapGraphicNovels.com. That's CheapGraphicNovels.com. Everything you need to know is right in the name. Omnibus editions, trade paperbacks, manga, OGNs, all that stuff for a fraction of the retail price. And there's a huge Wumba Marvel sales going on now. 50% off. And more on Marvel hardcovers and trade paperbacks. It's great. It's amazing. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to go over there and take a look around. You're going to find something, inevitably, that you want to buy. You're going to buy it, and you're going to get an email message saying, hey, thanks for buying something here at CheapGraphicNovels.com. And you're going to reply to that email message with, you know what? I would have never known about this wonderful place if not for 11 O'Clock Comics. And Max is going to say, bring, much like Peter Pan. He's going to cast you under his spell, and you're going to get free shipping on the next order. It's amazing. CheapGraphicNovels.com. In light of today, I wish I had a bucket of this stuff. But unfortunately, I only have three of them, which will not be enough. It is Sam Adam Boston Lager. It is very distinctively complex and balanced. I will give it that.
Mm.
Yes. And I'm drinking.
Now, is Sam Adam in any way a knockoff of Samuel Adams?
No, it's Sam Adam. I can call him Sam Adam because he's my bro.
Ah.
But it is known as Samuel Adams. But, yeah. It's always funny to lop off parts of a word. Do you not know that yet? Sam Adam is funny because people be like, is he talking about Sam Adams or is he talking about Sam Ad, like, what's he drinking? Because it's just dumb. It's funny and dumb. Kind of like, that encapsulates me in a nutshell. Funny and dumb.
Like spaghetti.
Like spaghetti, yeah. From behind the plant. I thought it was the boss's kid. No, it's Sam Adam.
I am drinking water.
Nice.
there was a, you're not wrong, Vince. And I was watching a video this morning of this couple that are about to have, they're getting ready to welcome their new child, and they're going to have a son, and the boy's name is going to be Joseph Charles, and that's only so the dad can just call him Joe Chuck.
Joe Chuck, yeah. That, you know what? I think Italians are famous for just trimming that that last vowel or something off a word, because we have a lot of words in Italian, I mean, at least in casual Italian around, you know, around the house with the family, that we don't say, we don't pronounce the last part of the word. It's strange, but it exists. It's a thing.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Like spaghetti. Or you know, mozzarella, we just say mozzarella. Yeah. We just
prosciutto.
Yeah, just that vowel. It's like, who put this extra vowel at the end of the word? We don't need it.
We don't need it.
Yeah.
Well, that's how you know. That's how you know it's Italian.
Yeah.
If it's a vowel at the end, it's either it's typically. I mean, it could be Greek, but it's more often not Italian.
Like risotto. It's risotto. Hey, Grandma made the risotto. No, it's risotto, yeah. But just
with risotto.
Yeah, it's like vowels cost. Yeah. It's like you have to buy the vowel. Like you're on, you know.
Yes, you're on a fortune.
Yep.
This is. I almost forgot I had this on the shelf because I haven't had it. I don't know if I've had a sip of it since we moved here, because Dominion gifted this to me before we moved out of the old house. This is 914. Westchester, New York, bourbon whiskey it's bottled out of Portchester, which is off there over by the Sound and border of Connecticut. But it's really good, and I almost forgot how good it is, and that's probably why I haven't had it in a while. And while there's just as much as there is of it left, because I was trying to just savor it, I want to make it last. So I'm enjoying that tonight.
Great. Sounds great. Good. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Jason had a little idea for this episode.
Although after thinking about it, I'm not going to speak for him. But yeah, I mean, he and I were definitely thinking the same thing.
Jason's going to tell you
about
this little idea that you came up with on the Slack for this episode.
Well, it's going to be anticlimactic. I thought we had a fun idea for a conversation, which is, we've known each other all for so long now, we really know each other's tastes, we generally know when we bring something to the show if the others are going to be into it or not, and I thought, wouldn't it be fun to riff a bit about the things that baffle us because the others don't like it, like something that we just can't understand that they don't like it because everything we know about them would suggest you should like it.
Right.
And I threw that out there and you guys said, great idea. And then I went about my day and had a little notepad going, trying to figure things out. And I had very difficult times trying to come up with things after coming up with the idea.
Well, one came immediately to me, and you probably already for Jason. And Jason, you probably already know what it's going to be, but I find it hilarious and a little bit sad that Jason gets a whiff of pre-1940 characters and he's out like the herpes. Like, that's, I'm talking true, specifically about the pulp characters. Even though, yes, all of the characters he loves,
yep,
are based in some respect on the classic pulp characters. He doesn't want to hear it. He's just like, ooh. This smells like the Roaring Twenties. I cannot read this.
It's that word right there. That is, I think, what made this difficult for me, because it wasn't so much as we've known each other for as long as we've known each other. It's not the baffling, because I kind of expect it. I understand you guys a little bit more now. So baffling might not be the right word for me. Maybe saddened, because there are things that I'll think about, and my enjoyment of something isn't dependent on if anybody else is reading along with me. It's cool if they are, and we're all going to have fun. But I'm not going to be like, oh, you don't like this? Okay, I'm going to be all depressed about it. I mean, I might be a little bummed that, hey, I think you dig this. You're not reading it. Okay, that's fine. Whatever. It's not detracting for my enjoyment, but it's something I thought we could share together. It can be a bit of a bummer for me more than baffling.
That's one of the things that came to mind when Jason suggested this exercise, was that we as human beings, when we find value in a piece of art or something similar, whether, you know, it be visual or a novel or a song. Whenever something manages to pierce that membrane and actually touch us in some way, we want to shout out, "This is great!" And we're waiting for that signal to bounce back. And when it doesn't bounce back, that's when you get into the whole, we've seen it online a million times where people get irate because someone doesn't recognize the brilliance of this thing. And the worst thing in the world is trying to convince someone other than yourself of the value in art. Like that is an unwinnable game. It's a fruitless pursuit. You shouldn't even engage in it because number one, they're not you. So their perceptive mechanisms are not the same as yours. They don't have the experience or the history with whatever it was that you do. Even if you stumble upon something for the first time, maybe there's something within the art that triggered something in your personal history that they don't have, or maybe they just don't appreciate it flat out. Maybe they just don't like it. We're always waiting for that, like whales, right? Like just to keep it in Jason's area of the ocean. Whales, they ping, right? And they're waiting for that ping back. That's what we do. We wait for the ping to come back because we want to find like-minded individuals that share our joy. You remember when I'm older than you guys, but I can remember vividly walking out of Empire Strikes Back. And the thing was, whoa, when they knocked down that giant AT or AT-AT and the ships were flying around the legs and with the cords, that was awesome. And, you know, and that's what people do. They want to share the joy of something, right? And when you have that joy and you send it out and it doesn't get returned, it could be a little bit of a bummer. I mean, I don't care about sharing things like that. I mean, when I find value in something, I find value in something. I like strange stuff anyway. And if it makes me happy, then great. But it's rare and it's fun and it's kind of wonderful when you meet someone out there that actually does share. Like Matthew Allison, ding ding, with the psychotronic movies. Like there's not a whole lot of people in our group. Ray's one of them, right? Zach Crusay's one of them that love these shitty ass movies for what they are. So there's a couple of weirdos, but it's not something that's liked by, you know, the majority. Those are the big summer blockbusters or the Marvel movies, right? But so when you find these people that can bounce that signal back, it's a great thing. It's a fun thing.
In Jason's example on the Slack, like you said, with Department of Truth, I was all about it from jump because of the conspiracy theories and especially with the flat earth at the start. So I was all ready. And then of course Jason read it and we both naturally figured between the conspiracy theories, between the cryptids, everything that they were going to discuss, that it would be right up your alley. And I'm not saying I was completely floored when you didn't even want to check it out, but
I have the omnibus.
I know. You did eventually come around, and I was delighted, and it was great to see. But us wanting to talk about it with you,
we can do it.
I know that, but at the time, I'm saying right, back then, right, over a year ago, 2 years ago, when we were ready, and it was like this was fresh and new and exciting. This is like holy crap, this is right up Vince's alley. How much fun could we have with this? It was a little deflating just to be like, I mean, not that we still didn't have fun. We obviously talked about it. We had a great time with it. But my anticipation, my expectations were higher because of what I was expecting. And then obviously,
you can't
predict these things. You can't speak for someone else. So if in this case it was the art at the time, if you weren't grooving to that, you weren't feeling it, you know, I'm not going to force anybody. I'm not going to change anybody's mind. But yes, it was one of those things. Which was just, it's the same thing on the Slack. You could have a dozen people. You want to talk about the latest issue of whatever this Marvel blood or when the 2099 event that's going to happen this summer. Like a dozen people are going to come in. Vince is going to be leading the charge, talking about it. You have that one dude who's going to be like, yeah, but I can't believe they fucking did this, and it's just gonna, like, the
but
like
that's okay.
That one guy.
Yeah, it's,
I know,
okay.
No, we can definitely steamroll that. But there is always that contrarian, that one guy who wants to be that fucking that nail in the road that's going to deflate the tire.
And, contrarians are good.
Contrarians can be, yes, when they offer something of value, but to just be like, oh, that sucks, and then they just move on, like they just drop a shit turd in the goddamn middle of the room when they walk out, that's not the kind of conversation, that's not the discourse, that's not the debate I want to have. If you didn't like something, then let's discuss it, because, again, I'm not trying to change anybody's mind, but I want to understand where you came at it from so I can see, okay, what is it that I'm telling you what I enjoyed about it. I'd like to know what you didn't like about it so I'll know from now on, okay, you didn't like this, you didn't like the way it was drawn, or you didn't like the dialogue, whatever. I'll know, okay, I'll stand back and maybe not recommend something like this to this particular person in the future.
Well, I think at the heart of it, the problem is art is not a shared experience.
That's true.
We've made it a shared experience with concerts and movies and TV shows and you know, these communal things where we gather around the water cooler on Mondays and talk about the show we saw Sunday. But at the nexus of art, it's a singular experience. Your perceptions of art are never ever going to mirror anyone else's because they are not you. They don't have the deciphering mechanism that you do. And yours will never ever be theirs. But because of commerce and the like, we've made art a communal experience. And that's where the problem lies. It's a one-on-one thing. It's a dialogue between you and the thing you're listening to, looking at, watching, reading, whatever. So to share that experience is, number one, impossible. You can approximate it, but to get to the honest to God real feelings of what you had experiencing this art, nobody else is ever going to be able to bounce that back to you, because again, they're not you. Let's see if we can get Jason cooked up here, because he dropped. So he's going to reset the modem, so let's give him some time. But yeah, this was one of the things that I thought this was a really cool experiment in that we already know what you guys like and what each other likes and doesn't like. For David, what I can say is it's not a specific genre or character. It's more of an environment. You hate it and find it borderline unbearable when there's not a character in a piece of art that you can't find something respectable about. That totally turns you right off. Right?
There has to be a redeeming quality about the character. Okay, so obviously you're a redeemable Ant-Man. That's
the example. I mean, we've read some stuff where you're just like, I don't like anybody in this book.
Yeah,
and then just turn you right off. You know, I don't think that's a wrong way to approach it, because you're an optimist. You're a good guy.
And nobody, you can't write a story. You can't create a tale that's going to please everyone. It's not going to happen. So if this is the story you need to tell, and these are the characters that are in it, then so be it. Nobody, I don't want anybody to think about me when they're writing a book, because I am obviously by all means, there are way more people out there interested in that type of story. So I'm missing out in that regard. So yeah, whereas there are nights where we're all going to talk about one particular thing or we're all going to team on something, that's great. But if it's a book, like if it's a story like that, then sure. Yeah. No, I'm fine sitting that out. I'd rather hear you guys talk about it than me have to go through reading it.
And it's not your fault, and this is your personal preference, but I don't think it's the goal of the person making the art to please the audience.
Right.
If you're trying to please the audience, I think you're either a sellout or you're making art for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, that's not, yeah.
Yeah. Jason, hi.
Hey.
How are you doing? How are you?
I don't know. You tell me.
It's not much better.
Oh my god.
It's yeah. Well, let's just run with it. So Dab.
I don't want to talk though. If it sounds bad, that's silly.
That's good.
But it's a chimera because it's you got a terrible front end and then it gets good and then you get a terrible tail end. So it's like we'll pick up on most of it.
So strange, dude.
It is.
Now it's good.
Yeah. So run with it. So what did you come up with for Dap and I?
For you, it's a creator. It crushes my soul with bewilderment that you don't like Matt Kent's art.
Wow.
Yeah, it's true.
Because, like, I understand that Matt doesn't have an art style that would be, I think, accessible to a lot of, say, conventional comic readers, right? Like, you know? But you are so far afield from that. I mean, you can appreciate the most rudimentary of line art, you know? I mean, you see beauty in the abstract even. And you know, and but you also appreciate really clean line art at times too. So you run the gamut. So it's just it's very hard for me to figure out why Matt Kent doesn't work for you, whereas like, you know, like my food I think you like, and I'm pretty sure you're okay with Lemire's art, and you know, maybe I'm wrong there, I don't know, but like but obviously you like, so yeah, so I guess I've never figured out or even asked you why, but every time I bring up Kent I feel like you get way more excited about Kent the writer than you are Kent the artist.
1,000 times. Yes.
Yeah.
I think he's a formidable writer. As an illustrator, how do I put this nicely? I like faux naivete in art. I like it when, look at Josh Bayer's stuff. Josh will shorthand a piece of anatomy, or he'll do a figure study very quickly, and it's just the merest hint of a figure. But you could decipher what it is, right? The lines are scratchy and raw and immediate and powerful. But when Matt does it, it looks like someone inexperienced to me. It looks like a foundation year art student that's trying to draw hands for the first time and is shorthanding them or doing a very quick job rendering the hands. I guess the bottom line is to my eyes, there doesn't seem to be an experience and a calculated approach to the unrefined look. It just looks raw and clunky to me. It doesn't look like there's a like with Bayer, you could tell there's a wizard behind it. Like, he is speaking in the language unique to Josh Bayer, where Matt Kent, yes, it's his visual language, but it looks like a piece of steak that's been left on the counter for a week. It looks spoiled and smelly and scratchy and not pleasant to my eyes at all. That's it.
And like I said, no, I mean, it just fascinates me just because I mean.
All these characters have rectangular heads, and there's no finesse to it. It looks like he labors over every drawing. Like the body language is not subtle. It's very wooden and I don't want to keep smacking the guy. I like his stuff. But if you give him a typewriter, not a pencil, or not a drawing pencil, right. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I hear you, and obviously it always strikes me as sort of this weird outlier, just because
it's
general, you know, just if the storytelling's good, so.
But who's the joke's on me because Matt is making a very good living drawing and writing comics, that's just my opinion. Like if I ever and it's not something that I would try to conceal. If we ever met him, I wouldn't come out and say, I really don't like the way you draw. I would say, I think you're, you know, if it ever got on the subject, I think you're a phenomenally strong writer. It's just that visual voice that I can't seem to find that golden nugget in it. And maybe it's me. Maybe I just have to keep, I don't know. I don't know. And you're making me feel bad for it, but it's a little bit, a little bit. But yeah, it's just all what we love. Or the stuff that we find value in. I don't find very much, if anything, in his visual work.
Sure. And one that came to mind for you both, and it's a long-running joke, so any long-time listeners know, it's Next Wave. Nothing's ever...
That's flat out trash. That is garbage. It really is. Oh, Fins Bang Foom's got shorts on. Yeah, whatever.
It's being hurtful.
But... I'm kidding. The art's great.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it looks... It's a home run in the visual department. It's just, yeah.
And for DAP, there's two... Well, so... The two that first came to mind are no longer the case, which is that I thought for a long time when we were doing the show, you didn't like Kirkman or Miller in the same way you don't like Zdarsky. It was just like a non, like you're like, no, I'm not into it.
Oh.
And I think you've come around on both, you know, at least to some degree, or to a big degree, I think, at this point.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm going to throw one out that I don't even know if we've ever really acknowledged it, but I was trying to come up with a list today. I thought, I'm not sure you like Brian K. Vaughan all that much.
Who's you?
Yeah. Oh. You liked, I know we all gave Saga his flowers that first year.
Oh, you know, Saga's amazing.
But I kept up with Saga, right?
I didn't. I tried Ex Machina, wasn't really feeling it.
For liking why?
I read the first trade because CGS was doing their book review of it, so I tried the first trade of that, and it was fine, but it didn't compel me to keep going with it. Would I give it a shot now? Probably. I'd probably check it out if I could find the collections cheap enough. Maybe I will.
One of the big ones that, you know, that came to mind when I thought about all this. I, you know,
I'm not a huge fan.
Robinson, so.
I intensely dislike Runaways.
I do like those the Alfona art. Yeah, no, I do like Runaways.
Yeah, I really like Runaways, but you gave Saga its flowers too, Vince. I mean,
yes, I think Saga's very good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. It's not Runaways. That's for sure.
No, it's not Runaways. No.
Runaways is a fascinating book. Not that we're ever going to do a deep dive on it, but like some of the people that have done runs on that like would surprise people. Like Gary Moore did a long run.
Yeah. No,
and it's like, I'm pretty sure that's the only... Like at least
no, he did. Well, it's not the only Marvel. I don't know if you're going to say it's only Marvel because he did that Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane manga-esque series. Oh, right.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, that was when CB was trying to get all the manga types. Yeah. So, did you guys say while I was reconnecting? Did you guys say anything for me?
Well, I said pulps.
You said pulps for you.
That's true. Yeah.
And for me, he said the lack of any redeemable characters in the story.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Well, you don't like precocious kids very much.
Well, no, yeah, the kids definitely, yeah. But if some dude, but like, so for example, like Eric O'Grady from Irredeemable Ant-Man, like it was a chore for me to read those 12 issues because it was, I did not like this character. And Kirkman wrote it, but you know, it was fine, but it was obviously the character's just like, I have that associate and I shouldn't, especially after, you know, growing up reading Grimjack and Nexus and God knows what else. Like it shouldn't matter to me that if there's a character in a story that they're not necessarily heroic, they don't all have to be, you know, it's whatever the story dictates, but yeah, I guess.
Another one for Vince, which is more top of mind these days, is your just complete disconnect to anything DC related. And again, it's not really baffling. Like, it doesn't fit into the baffling category, but it does every so often still, you know, it still feels weird to me because you were such a DC guy for so long.
Right.
And you know, it's not like you've ward off the big two. I mean,
no,
much a week or two, you're talking about some Marvel book that's tickling your fancy. And I you know, and it's just funny. I think, like, man, it's just the cycle of life. I mean, there was a time when it would have been just the opposite for you. And
this one's kind of different, though, because it's almost like I woke up one morning and thought to myself, yeah, I never need to read another Batman story. Like, I'm good with it. I'm fine.
Right, but what I'm saying is, but you can still be tickled over a symbiote story,
sure.
or a 2099 event,
right?
2099 or Wolverine story, like, yes. You're tired of those.
But remember, it all goes back to the roots.
Sure.
Like, I started with Marvel.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you're right. It makes sense that they would be the last man standing in the big two. DC, I came into late. When John Byrne got on Superman, so did I came to DC. Yes, I knew about the New Gods, and I had those issues because of Kirby and Commandy. Like, all the Kirby stuff I had, and I knew about. But even Jack never propelled me to read Superman after he left Jimmy Olsen. Like, okay, Superman, big deal. But when Byrne came, that was like, that lit a fire underneath me for decades. Like, I bought every DC book for a long, long, long time. And I don't like, even if they did another revamp of Legion, I don't know if I'd read it because how many, I mean, the same thing. I love Legion, but how many Legion revamps can I read? Like, I've been through all of them. I don't find anything attractive, with very few exceptions, like Batman Dylan Dog. Okay. That's a great looking book. It's a wonderful read, but that's not the lever that's going to open that trap door and make me fall back into DC. It's not going to happen. I can feel it. It's like a physical thing. Like, I've lost the capacity to enjoy DC books.
And that's where it's a little bit of a stink for me. And I absolutely get it. But considering it was Byrne that did bring you to Superman, and right now with this latest relaunch, and especially now, because as I was reading these first two parts, it reminded me of Panic in the Sky. It stings a little bit that you won't give this new current Superman run a try.
Well, I mean, I haven't sworn off all DC. I bought the Man of Steel omnibus editions. I bought whatever Superman omnibus came my way. I'm buying the Triangle omnibus. So it's like, I will dip into the past. Like, if they did a Superboy omnibus, that series,
got that first trade, but yeah.
Well, no, the series that came up, Death of Superman. After that, I'd buy that whole, because there's great stuff in that. Tom Grummet, shut up.
We got one trade of that so far.
Yeah, I mean, so it's not like, oh, DC, I'm not going to buy it. That's not true. Current DC, I just don't.
I get it.
Yeah.
No, it's fair. Yeah, yeah.
And the other one was, I'm surprised, and maybe it's the art, maybe it's the story, I don't know, but that you haven't, and if you have tried it, you haven't mentioned it because maybe it just wasn't very good, but the Aliens license at Marvel.
Yeah, I'm not reading that.
No. I know. Which is more surprising me than, I mean, that doesn't bother me as
it's a stupid reason, it's a silly reason, but you know what I'm going to say.
What?
Aliens belongs at Dark Horse.
Okay.
That's it.
That's fair.
That's the entire reason. I don't want to read.
I don't disagree with you.
It's Aliens coming out of a giant publishing house like Marvel. I don't want to read it. Where Dark Horse was perfectly acceptable. I that's just my stupid brain, you know.
And it's where it's like Star Wars. I don't mind seeing Star Wars come out of Marvel, because when the movie hit, that's the publisher who had it. So I mean, I'm fine with Star Wars being at Marvel, but when you do have the big franchises like that, it can be a little weird.
Yeah. Strange.
Yeah. Another thing I have written down for Dap, and again, maybe this is more of the you just never have gotten around to it, but I feel like you don't have much of any love for 100 Bullets.
Oh my God, dude, no.
Oh, you do?
Oh yeah, no, you're way off on that one. Absolutely. Okay. No, right. I was buying the trades. I bought the first, I think, two trades from my old comic shop, and then I was buying the singles. And I think I have most of the run. I might be missing a couple of issues, but no, I that's a fan. Although Dad had mentioned it, they were shoved in a box and then shoved in a closet, and then we moved. So I need to dig them out because I honestly don't think I read the conclusion. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We'll see there. Yeah. I was looking at like the list of greatest graphic novels, greatest runs to see if there were any that stood out that I thought, oh, my booze don't like these. That's weird. But the ones that I saw that you guys don't like they're not, it's not baffling. Like I understand why you don't like them. Like We Three, for example. Like we know I adapt it like We Three because it's about, animals being tortured. That's not a baffling thing. That makes sense. So I get that, right. And like I get why Vince isn't grokking on blankets. Like I understand that.
Yeah, oh my God. Yeah. I even tried that.
I read it though. It was just like okay.
I can't finish it. All right. Kudos to you.
But I'm not surprised that you guys didn't like it, right? Like that's not.
Well,
like,
it's not one thing to dismiss a piece of art whole cloth. I'm not gonna read that. I don't want, but in our position, we need to be informed, right? So when Blankets came out and it got this huge critical acclaim, like I have to read it now just so I can have at least an informed opinion. It didn't do anything for me, but I didn't want to say it's bad. It's certainly not bad at all. It's very well constructed and it's nice to look at. But as far as the story, I'm just like, yeah, it's okay.
I was thinking to myself, like, what would I think for me, the one I came up with is Scott Pilgrim for me. Like, there's no reason why I shouldn't love Scott Pilgrim. Like, I like all of the conceits in it. Like, all of the things that make Scott Pilgrim individually, I like. So I don't know why I don't connect with the book, like, that everyone else seems to absolutely love.
I think it's the trendiness of it that pushed you away.
That's how it is for me at times.
It's like the hipster book. At the time.
Yeah, it's the hipster thing, I think is what it is, yeah. It's the beanie wearing, kombucha drinking, sort of like, I'm never going to get a real job because life sucks and what's the point thing that I just can't. It's the same reason I'm not, I guess a big fan of, Hanselman stuff, because it's generally slacker humor and I'm just not into that. I'm just not a slacker, so slackers annoy me.
Yeah, I mean, I love Hanselman, but the whole boutique aspect of his that he's cultivated with his self-published little zine things that eventually trickle their way into the hardcovers, like that kind of turns me off, that he's getting 10, 15 bucks for this little pamphlet that he prints himself. I mean, if you could do it, great. I mean, the guy's got to eat. But I think there's a very fine line between giving to the fans and exploiting the fans, right? So and it's like a time sensitive release too. When he says, I got a new zine coming out, there are people there ordering like five copies, you know what I mean, to bounce them back on eBay and hopefully to keep one for themselves. But it's become this boutique, it's the equivalent of like the sneaker ordeal where they release this pair of sneakers in very limited quantities and then people buy it up, not because it's great art, but because it's a sneaker they can turn around and sell. I think there's a component of that in the Hanselman universe now, and that's kind of like souring me a little bit. Just release the books from DC, or not DC, sorry, Fantagraphics. Just keep doing what you're doing. But I mean, on the one hand I say that, and on the other hand it's like, yeah, I'm glad this guy can make a good living from his art. Like, should you begrudge a person for doing that? So it's like six of one. I'm really torn when I see it. The feeding frenzy when he releases a new self-published zine. A little bit of jealousy, I'll be honest, and a lot of like, why are you guys buying this? It's going to come out in a different form in like 6 to 12 months. What do you?
Although, it's funny how well at that, because I mean, someone posted the link to the new Dynamite Diva and by, you know, Jasper Jubenvilles, and I clicked on it and it was $40. And I'm thinking, do I really want to spend $40 on a comic?
That's 40 Canadian still. Yes.
Yeah, no.
It's not real money then. It's Canadian.
27 right. US or something. But I ended up buying it because I really like his stuff. But it's it's pretty ridiculous. Like, it is a ridiculous price.
If I'll be totally honest, if Bayer or Matt Allison came out with a self-published thing and they were charging $20 for 20 pages, I would pay it. I would. I mean,
he charges like $20 for his like little zine comics that he now brings to cons.
And it's fine because I'm funding two artists that I really, really love, genuinely love. And I'm getting a wonderful return on my investment. It's making me happy, and it's this little artifact that I can keep and treasure and cherish. So, yeah, I understand it. I get it. But there's part of me that it's just like, wow, this whack. You're buying this now, and then you're going to buy it again when it's collected. And it's just strange. This is strange little practice that we engage in. I don't understand.
All right. Audience's views on this, right? Because I think one that came to mind when we were doing this today for me on that front was that I know that a lot of people were probably baffled when we did the book of the month on Tintin, because we're all like, so, I mean, that is heralded ground for so many people.
Yeah, that's like saying the Bible sucks ass. Like, this book's terrible. And
that is the highest, that is the consensus highest regarded comic work, I think, that we all collectively didn't really love. Like, I think if we were to pull up any of those lists, there may be others that are up there that one or two of us don't love as much as, say, the consensus, but I don't know that there's ever been one that's as well regarded as Tintin that we all were kind of like,
to our credit, we didn't dump on it. We were just like, it's okay.
We all said, we're glad to have finally read it for it and understand its historical significance and all that, but it just isn't. It wasn't like we all were like, oh man, I'm going to pick up some more Tintin collections now.
And I could understand people's disbelief, because if I heard someone say the same type of things we said about Tintin and they directed it towards Karl Barks, I'd be like, you're out of your fucking mind. Like, you are just totally broken. Because, and I equate the two, they're pretty much in the same, they have the same approaches to creating sequential art. It's almost the same, there's wiggle room, but it's almost the same style. And it's just like, if you can't see the brilliance of Karl Barks, like, what's wrong with you? And I'm sure we got a lot of that when we were just like, yeah, Tintin's okay. You know, we're not perfect, maybe. I don't know.
True. Close to it.
With Jason, I think I'm a little. I mean, I understand why the things like Omaha or Grimjack or even Nexus. I understand why there'd be an interest to read those stories. But some of the other things, even the underground stuff from the 70s or 80s, Fabulous Fairy Freak Brothers.
That would kill Jason. That would totally kill him.
Because you are, Jason, so eclectic with your tastes, and you do find things funny, but there are times where I'm just like, he wouldn't jive with this, but it hurts me a little bit because I'm I think
cheese is horribly off-putting.
Oh yeah, no, that's right. No, absolutely. Yeah, it's. I mean, talk about characters that I should really find. I shouldn't bother to read, but
I guarantee you, if I ever force Jason to read all five issues of comics book, he would be especially the first issue. But that's not your stuff. Like I would expect you. I would expect you to like the Spiegelman story, but the rest of it would probably fall on deaf ears with you.
Yeah, I didn't love it. I mean, I had that slipcase. Right.
That's not all of it, though.
Oh, it's not?
No, it's selected stuff.
Yeah. I wasn't crazy about it, but I didn't dislike it either.
You saw the value in it, and you understand why I love it, but it's not for you. And that's the perfect approach to stuff. where, yeah. you know, you don't, again, you should never dodge that signal and then flip the bird, right? I mean, just if the signal's not for you, you step around it and you just let that person find like-minded individuals that share their appreciation of the work. Unfortunately, that's not the approach of most people online.
You're right. I mean, and this would be probably this dovetails into a conversation for maybe another night, because it could be its own thing. But this sort of kissing cousin to this idea are like the works that, like, there are works that you love or that we love that you totally understand why someone might not connect with it. And then there are works where you're like, you're really going to see your comic fan and you don't love that?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, it's not just comics for me. There are books and movies and music, sure. right, where you're like, ah, oh, man, I don't know. Like, if you front on that, I got to side eye your taste. Like, I don't know. Like, that's pretty universally awesome. Like, it's hard for me to
understand. I think it's all in the approach. I think depending on the age of the person voicing the opinions, you can not find value in a piece of art and not shit on it. Like, I've heard people say, yeah, I thought the Beatles sucked. You know, and it's just, no. How do you inform that person that, no, and just show the history of pop music up until that point, and then everything that came after the Beatles that was transformed in their wake, and the doors that they opened, and just the synergy between all four members. You can go on and on and on about the brilliance of the Beatles, but to just flat out say, I thought the Beatles sucked. Like, either you're incredibly young and you haven't formulated a mechanism for deciphering and appreciating art on its own terms, or you're just a dick. You're just young and stupid. Like, I don't understand.
It's a conversation, Jason, and I've had in the past. You can not care for the Beatles, but to be completely oblivious or ignorant to the fact of their contribution or appreciate what they've done. There's a big difference just between, like, I don't like that band, or they suck.
It's to totally disregard the opinions of a huge group yes. of people is ignorant, and it's born out of youth. In most cases, it's the young trying to raise the hackles of the people that appreciate it, or, you know, live through it, or just find value in it.
And someone's saying something sucks, they just they don't have the ability to put into words what they don't like about it.
I think that's true.
I think we've said this a lot. There's plenty of room for people to believe anything is objectively bad, and if they might have points. But yes, the Beatles would be a great example of where I'm like, no, there is no objectively valid argument for why the Beatles would be bad.
Right.
Like,
right.
Anyone says to me, I don't really like the Beatles, like, I'm like, totally fine. Like, we're off a duck's back. Wouldn't affect me at all. Just like I, for years, you know, didn't listen to, like, Led Zeppelin, right? Just not because I didn't figure it wasn't my thing. And then I finally came around to them. But I never once during those years where I wasn't, like, a Led Zeppelin fan said, like, oh, they suck. I just said, I don't really listen to Led Zeppelin.
It's preposterous. Yeah.
No, but my point is, like, but to say this is just crazy, right? Like, like, that being said, if someone told me, like, I think, you know, I think Kendrick Lamar sucks, like, again, I would side eye them, but, like, I wouldn't be like, okay, well, you know, if you don't like rap, he certainly, like, I don't know, like that cutoff of where I'm like, no, you're just foolish is pretty high. Like, I'm like, it's not like I have hundreds of bands or hundreds of comics where if someone said, like, I think that sucks, I'd be like, you're just insane. But like, there are comics. Like, I'm not like the yes. old Watchmen. Like you can get away with, like, some people trying to be cool and be like, well, Watchmen's all right. Like, or it's not my favorite. Like, I can accept that. Like, I can accept that. But you come at me with Watchmen's a bad comic, and then I'm like, you just don't like comic books. Like, that's silly. Like, that is ridiculous. Yes. Like, that's absurd.
Let's continue this conversation in the parking lot.
Yes, exactly.
All right, everybody. Hey, I don't even know what to call what we just did, but we hope you enjoyed it. Yeah, please. Check out our sponsor, CheapGraphicNovels.com, because they're going to get you all the book you want at the fraction of what you want to pay. For OGNs, omnibus editions, trade paperbacks, manga, all that stuff. Order something. Email comes in. Respond to the email. 11 o'clock comic sent me. Max will give you free shipping on your next order. Brilliant. And please check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/11oclockcomics. Total revamp. Everything's kicking. Lots of fun stuff. I just struck gold for the fanzine flashback. I just extended it by another 200 days. Dap's going to blow a gasket when he sees what I have. So here we go. And the Slack, dedicated Slack channel, where like-minded individuals, and some not, just commune every day and talk about comics and movies and TV and books and all the stuff. And we love it.
And now we have 100% more Vander.
Sure.
It's always a good thing. He's a handsome friggin' man. In your travels, I implore you to get yourself to a comic shop and pick up The Untold Destiny of the Foot Clan. Second issue came out Wednesday, is written by Eric Burnham, illustrated beautifully by Mateus Santoloco, color art by Marco Lesko, letters by Sean Lee. It's a thematic successor to a previous miniseries called Secret History of the Foot Clan, but in this one, and it's a head-scratcher. It's making me wonder. I don't believe that Jason Aaron is going to come in and scrap 150 issues plus the offshoots and the miniseries and the one-shots. I don't think Jason Aaron is going to scrap the IDW continuity. Number one, it is the longest Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles continuity in existence of any publisher. 150 consecutive issues plus everything else of continuity. I don't believe that Aaron's going to cast it aside. I think he's going to work with what he has. Hopefully. Two, why would you instigate this miniseries right now, which focuses on Karai and the Foot Clan, if you're just going to have a big name come in and scrap everything that's been done? Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So I'm hopeful that Aaron's going to come in and tweak and proceed apace. So what's this miniseries about? Well, as I said, Karai and the Foot Clan are hired to infiltrate an underground research facility. Get in there and steal this piece of rare proprietary technology. So you got Casey Jones, member of the Foot Clan, and Natsu. They're constantly at odds. And you got Bebop and Rocksteady. They get into this installation and they have a particularly difficult time taking down a mutated whale. Jason, mutated whale. Guess what his name is?
Oh, man. Dorka.
Scrimshaw.
Love it.
What?
Yes.
Yes.
That is a great name.
He is a beast. And he almost takes out Bebop and Rocksteady, but they find a way around it. So they don't encounter very much difficulty until they locate the tech, which is a very powerful Utrom energy generator, which is now in the hands of a pair of agents from something called the Dogstar Clan. So I want you to think G.I. Joe, especially Cobra Commander. These two representatives of the Dogstar Clan, one looks a bit like Cobra Commander, although the helmet is more dog-shaped, but the physical presence of both of them really screams Cobra to me. So a soldier takes out Casey and Natsu with very little effort. And Karai throws down with one whose garb kind of indicates that he's a high-ranking member of the Dogstar Clan. And she is severely beaten within like inches of her life. They don't even think she may walk again when they get her to the hospital. So enter Toshiro, who uses the Foot Clan healing magics to restore Karai. But guess what? He sacrifices his life to save her. So now she's broken. Her Foot Clan is being besieged by this new upstart Dogstar Clan. So in the second issue, it's all about pissing off the Dogstar Clan. They curtail their shipments. They waylay their agents and in the effort to force these guys out. This miniseries is great so far. I don't know how it's going to play into the big Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles picture proper, but if you give me a miniseries with Karai in the center, I'm going to read the damn thing and love it. And Mateus Santoloco, he used to be on The Ongoing for a stretch. He's brilliant. This is a wonderfully illustrated book, very bright, pleasing to the eye, action-packed, cinematic. I love it. Untold Destiny of the Foot Clan 1 and 2 from IDW. They're out there. Go get them.
I have them. I planned to read the first issue, and then the second came out. I was like, well, now I just got to read them both. But yeah, they're on the...
Yeah, they're two different beasts. The tone of the second issue is very, very different than the first.
Oh, very cool.
Well, Karai's all optimistic and shit, and she underestimates an opponent, and it gets Toshiro killed. And you know, he saved her life, but he sacrificed his in the process. So because she screwed up and didn't weigh this opponent with the respect and caution she should have, it led to his death. So, I mean, he didn't have to save her, but he kind of did. It's good. It's so good. Yeah.
So good.
Yes.
Any travel since I mentioned it earlier, I might as well make this it. It's the first two parts of House of Brainiac. These two issues, Action Comics number 1064 and Superman number 13, both written by Joshua Williamson and art by Rafa Sandoval. In the Action Comics issue, it's Lois Lane's first day off in years, and she's just kind of walking through Metropolis. She's got to get to the park because there's a whole it's time for yoga, and we have a great, I think the first issue for this event done pretty well, because as she's making her way through the city blocks, she's passing other members of the Superman family, so you get the little credit of each of the characters as she's walking by. She sees Perry White, who of course is running for mayor. She stops, she brushes off Steve Lombard. These panels are they're split up between also the inmates of either Stryker's Island or at who are either stationed at Steelworks or at Supercore. The city is enjoying a ball game, and while Lois and Jimmy and his girlfriend, who her alter ego is Silver Banshee, they're all in very zen yoga moments. Here comes Clark, all yelling about being late. But before they can kind of just relax for the day, you look up to the sky, and there are a bunch of armored, call them drones, but they're humanoid armored figures falling from the sky, as well as a slew of Zarnians, and no idea, because like Superman being the last son of Krypton, we all figured Lobo was the last of his planet. So Superman acts, and he's taking care of the androids. The rest of the Superman family also leap into action. They're trying to clear everybody off the city streets. Bunch of damage and destruction going on. Luthor is being removed from Strikers and is making his way towards Supercorp, because he's going to be involved in this rescue attempt and saving the day. But the oh shit moment for me was when Lex does arrive at Supercorp, and LLO1, which was basically a holographic, a computer generated image of Lex in like Kryptonian garb, which was basically just there to put Superman at ease as Lex's way of you know making Supercorp more friendly for Superman to basically take control on a day-to-day basis. And we find out, and this is a spoiler for a comic that's a couple weeks old now, when Mercy says to Lex, well, you set this up when you put Superman in charge. Lex says, I did no such thing. My fucking jaw hit the floor. This was all based on, this was completely set up by Brainiac from the start. And I was stunned, and it took me a second so I could continue the issue. But the issue ends. Well, I'm not gonna go page by page, but basically, Superman is left at a bit of a loss at the end of the first issue. He decides there's one thing he can do to hopefully even the odds, because even Lex sacrifices himself. Before Brainiac could take Superman, Lex puts himself in the line of fire. So Brainiac ends up scooping Lex away along with basically all of everybody near and dear, almost everybody near and dear to Clark. The second issue, that's when Superman decides that he's going to need some help, and he finds Lobo, and apparently the United Planets have basically quarantined Earth, and kudos to DC for bringing back the editor's notes, because I found out that that's what's been happening in Green Lantern, which I'm behind on. So basically the United Planets has put Earth under quarantine, so there's no going in or out. So Lobo's pretty much stranded on Earth, and he doesn't have his hog to get him off planet. But Superman and Lobo are teaming up to take care of Brainiac. Lobo's got the intel on the rest of the Zarnians, and a lot of them, though, he's never actually met or have seen in action, because some of them were he figured like the general that Brainiac put in charge. Lobo's like, that was, we just thought he was a boogeyman. Like, that was just a horror story parents told their kids to keep him in check at night. And here he is. Here's General Janel, and he's a badass. And it's somebody that I don't know if he's giving Lobo pause, but Lobo is aware of him and knows that he's a threat. But what was unique was when Superman does show up, because at first he kind of thought Lobo was involved in this. And he is, and Lobo thinking, I could go for a good scrap. Superman is not pulling his punches. Like, I mean, he yokes him up and throws him down and into a wall, and he's just like, and Superman is pissed. He's never seen the big blue Boy Scout like this, and he recognizes the severity of the situation, and so at least again, so there's a common enemy here, but this has. Just the cast of characters, the magnitude of the event, which is why I said it reminded me of Panic in the Sky, because even though that started off a little bit of a slow simmer, once everybody got involved and the gang was getting put together, it was becoming a bigger thing. And well, there's some tie-ins here, and this is, it's been a minute since I felt like I needed to get all the tie-ins for an event, and this is one that whether it's Power Girl or Green Lantern, whatever the hell else, there might be a House of Brainiac banner I'm going to treat myself and get all in on this. But these first two issues, these first two chapters have been fantastic. So still on the shelves, you can get them. House of Brainiac 1 and 2, Action Comics 1064, and Superman number 13.
I've always liked Brainiac. I'm intrigued by this, so you think you sold me on it. I haven't read it. Yep. Yeah. I was on the fence with it, but that was an effervescent review. Just because, I try and keep my Superman tight, my Superman reading tight.
You're right. Yeah.
All right. Respect. In your travels, kind of jibes with, this is definitely something I think will be appreciated by some and disregarded by many, and that's fine. And that is 7174 AD number 1, written and, well, collaboratively done by T.P. Louise and Ashley Wood.
Oh, I finally read something good.
Oh, my God. this is the latest in their own imprint at Image. I don't know how to say it. It's S-Y-G-Y-G-Y. Sygigi. I don't know how you say their imprint, this follows the 71-74-80 annual, which came out last year around this time, and we talked about it. But this is a book where if you're going to pick it up on a whim, you should know that you're picking it up for the experience of it. T.P. Louise and Ashley Wood are not generally interested in giving you a straight narrative story. That is not their vibe. I would liken this to those of you who are fans of modern art. If you go to a modern art installation or a gallery show, it's like that. You go there for the experience. You go there understanding that you're not going to have a guidebook explaining to you everything happening in the paintings or the sculptures, the whys and wherefores. You're part of the journey is just you taking it in and letting your mind fill in for you what you think it means and why it's important to you or isn't. That's what this is like. On some level, it is a comic, right? It is a pamphlet book, and it has two quote-unquote stories in it, called Duostar Racers and Miss and Misses. But that's really where it ends in terms of if you're looking for story. Yes, there are panels, yes, there's art, and yes, there are dialogue boxes, but this is not, again, this is not some kind of linear narrative. This is for you to take in an experience, and I think for most of us, it's about taking in Ashley Wood's fantastic art and his surreal approach, and just letting it sink in, and that's what you have to do here. And I had a blast just taking this in for what it is, and letting my mind go to places as I looked at these panels and these splash pages, and I love the experience. But again, it's not because I got any great story out of it. This is not for the story. It's really for the art and just the sort of the emotional experience of taking in Ashley Wood's renderings.
If I could draw like that for the rest of my life, I would be totally happy.
Yeah, I love his work too. Again, it's stunning.
Yeah,
certainly an artist that would be capable of drawing in any way that, like, you know, any more conventional way that people might want to see in an image book or something. He could certainly do it. It's just he chooses not to, and I love that about him.
Yep, I've always been jealous of Ashley Wood's ability. And I've read a lot of comics, and the majority of them don't make a whole lot of sense. He did the what's the PlayStation game where you have to sneak around? Solid Snake is in it. Metal Gear. He did the Metal Gear comic. I didn't know what the frig was happening in that thing, but it looked phenomenal. Yeah. So I love Ashley Wood. Yeah.
Yeah, he's one of those artists that I do is on my list of I would love to own a page. And again, just because to me, like any individual Ashley Wood panel is powerful, like regardless.
Right.
Kind of like what,
just to bring it on back to the whole first discussion where we traipsed into like the whole boutique approach. Ashley Wood has a cottage industry doing, I don't want to call them action figures. They're high-end collectibles in figurative form, and some not like the robots. He has a nice living with these figures because they are not freaking cheap at all. Yeah,
just Big Bad has some. Big Bad Twister has some.
Yeah, but like I was looking at the Astro Boy he did, and I would have bought it in a second, but it was like, yeah, I can't get away with spending that much money. Yeah, it's a lot. All right. Hey, everybody. Thank you for being here with us. We'll be back really soon to give you more of this. Buy some comics, read some comics, and talk about them because that's what makes this industry prosper. And enjoy them, please. Don't go online and just belch negative opinions because nobody cares. We love you. Tell them you love them and say goodnight. What's his name? Fred? Bartholomew? No. It sucks without the music. It really does.
Cletus.
Cletus Auritus Auritus. David.
Hi. Tell them you love them.
Forever and ever and ever.
Forever and ever and ever. Ever and ever. David.
Nice. Say goodnight.
Peace. That's it for that one.